Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I am Lisa Anderson. Later on in the show, I get to answer our inbox question about balancing contentment with a single life versus hoping for marriage. It's the age-old question and one that everyone judges us on. So hopefully I'll be able to give some encouragement to our listener. And then for our culture segment, our friend Lori Polich Short is back with us to talk about her new book, When Changing Nothing Changes Everything, talking about reframing kind of your circumstances rather than trying to change them or think that you need to be rescued out of something. Just great, great insight from her, really in light of a lot of hardships that she has had. Speaking of hardships and finding ourselves and all of that, our roundtable is here to talk about finding faith on our own as a generation and as individuals within the context of family and our culture. And this is interesting, kind of born out of, we were reading an article that really talked about the rise of how a lot of marriages now are birthed out of mixed faith situations and backgrounds. And I think generally in the culture, I mean, Christians aside, hopefully, it is much more acceptable to get married, you know, being part of different faiths, which I think is kind of the homogenization of faith in general, of just, oh, you know, as long as you're a good person, whatever faith you want to ascribe to is totally fine. But it made me think of the question that I want to pose here, and that is just, do you guys have, like, from your own experiences, did you grow up in homes where your parents shared the same faith, and is that a faith that was easy for you to adopt, or did you go through a period of struggle, or what did that look like for you guys as far as, was it very assumptive as to kind of, you know, you knowing what was true and what was right, or did you have to kind of work it out on your own in that sense?
Yeah, you have to work it out. I grew up in a home with two parents that were, they prescribed to, you know, Protestant evangelical Christianity and very involved in the church, but I always felt like I was kind of just riding the coattails, like it was just expected to go to church, to go to youth, to be involved. And so I think the early part of my life, I accepted Christ when I was 8, and I still do believe that was, you know, I think it was genuine, and you know, I understood what I was doing, but I just had a hard time really kind of living it out, I guess. I just kind of went through the motions and through high school and got to college and made a conscious choice that I didn't want to be a Christian. I just didn't want to live that lifestyle. Mm. And so I had to kind of struggle through that for a few years before I finally realized, no, this is, you know, I had that moment, I think, where God did break me and allowed me through a circumstance to realize that, no, you know, it's true. And it, through that pain and suffering, that it's a relationship with Christ is important. So,
and did you circle back to kind of the same space you grew up in as far as where your parents are, or did you kind of strike out on your own?
Yeah,
in exploring,
would have been on my own. You know, I kind of went through phases where it was like, well, I'm an agnostic, you know, I believe in God, but I don't believe he's involved and active, you know. And that, as I look back on it, really was me just not being it's not a one-way relationship. You know, it was me just expecting God to do these things or just to be kind of there, but I wasn't engaging in a relationship. So how do you expect anything to really happen in your life when you're not making an effort to do it?
Yeah.
But there was a very distinct episode that brought me back around, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I grew up with parents who shared the same faith. But I think in spite of whatever other messiness there was in my family upbringing, one thing that my parents did really well, that I think came from my dad's background as a scientist and as a doctor, was the ability to ask questions, the ability to wrestle with faith, and the ability to ask to challenge and to make it. It really challenged us to make it our own. So we had us studying other worldviews and engaging with other cultures and points of view pretty early on, which definitely helped when I did hit that age of really needing to own my faith for myself. He had already kind of equipped me with the information I needed to look at these other worldviews, these other religions, these other ways of life, and make a decision on my own. So I'm grateful that my parents did that, because I had friends whose parents were much more rigid and their kickback against that, my friends' kickback against that, you know, push them in directions, you know, a lot more unhealthy directions than where I ended up. And I had to give my parents a shout out for that.
I grew up in a home with two Christian parents, and we went to church, and I went to church and was involved and was in youth group because that was just what we did. But there was a point in high school when my brother started making some choices that were affecting the family as a whole, where I had a moment where I realized it wasn't my faith yet. And I had to either choose that this was my faith, that I believed God was real and I was going to have a relationship with him, or I could just give up. And I didn't really like that option, so I went with the first one. And so far it's been better. I think that's a better choice. I'm glad I made that choice.
Yeah.
That's good. So you got to learn from your brother's mistakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of weird for me because hearing what you guys said, I kind of was in a similar situation of growing up in an evangelical home, but I grew up in the Bay Area of California where the majority of my friends were not believers. And in fact, many of them, because of the huge Asian population in the Bay Area, you know, came from Eastern religions. And they were very much generationally trying to find themselves in the midst of that. And it caused me to question why I believed what I believed. And, you know, it's very easy to look at that and be like, okay, well, they have got an actual shrine in their home and their parents are lighting incense and candles to idols. And so I would say, you know, well, I'm definitely, you know, there's not that. But it allowed me to examine the whole concept of idolatry, which we all know we're all susceptible to, and we're all worshiping something. But to really look at that and to really figure out, okay, how do I relate to my friends in the midst of this, because I think a lot of them were very kind of take it or leave it. They did a lot of it just to honor their parents or to feel like they were kind of tied to their cultural heritage and stuff. And of course, I think there's a lot of us that, as you guys are saying, you know, we can be tied to our cultural heritage of faith rather than having it be real. Did you guys have any distinct points? And maybe Brandon, you could kick it off. You mentioned having a distinct moment where you really realized, like, no, this is for real. I'm going to have to make an about face here. I mean, so maybe you can kind of kick it off. Yeah. But anyway, just any pivotal moments in life where we realized, yeah, this is going to have to be real.
Right. Yeah. And it was through a health crisis, really, that I could tie back to, like you said, an idol that I had in my life that was not God. And growing up, I remember my dad had told me a few times, you know, that he always believed, you know, that God would, my parents would tell me this over time, that, you know, he's a jealous God and he will pursue his children and, you know, he'll bring you back at some point. And I always used to kind of brush it off like, oh, it's not going to happen, until I went through this kind of situation. It was 2011, I believe, where it was very, just very vivid and just a very, for me, being very active, being athletic, to take that away. There was a period of time where I couldn't tolerate exercise, any strain, you know, just my body just gave up. It just shut down. And it was through that time where, you know, God really, I think, got a hold of me, and where I had to realize that I can't find my fulfillment, my worth through exercise, through the way I look. And, you know, that only comes through, you know, my place as a child of God. And it took that for me to realize it.
For me, it was, you know, the way my parents raised me, I think I'm very grateful for the way they allowed me to experience these other worldviews and such. But for me, where I kind of had to realize making it my own, apart from their faith and apart from what they've allowed me to experience with faith, was realizing how much I was allowing cultural Christianity to influence my faith, more so than my parents. You know, as I was soaking up, you know, books, and whether they're fiction or nonfiction, from like the cultural Christian community, I realized, and I'm realizing even more as I get older, how much of that shaped my faith. And so then in the last couple of years, and how much that cultural Christianity's approach to politics shaped my faith. And having to reconcile, oh, hold on, when I go to the scripture, I actually believe something different, whether it's political, moral, spiritual. And so for me, it was actually less kickback. It's funny because I've myself and my parents have kind of kicked back in the same way against the way we've seen ourselves adopting cultural Christianity norms and things like that. So for me, it was realizing I allowed too much of other people to define, oh, sure, I'll believe that and I'll believe the other thing and this sounds good, versus actually. So it was less taking it away from my parents' faith and taking it away from the culture's version of faith.
Mm-hmm.
That for me really caused that intense self-reflection and ownership.
Hmm. Yeah, so for me, when I was a freshman in high school, my brother just decided that he was tired of fighting with my parents one day. And so he just got up from the breakfast table, walked out, and never came back. Not never, he did eventually come back, but for a couple years he was gone. And just the strain that that put on my family, and he was my best friend at that point, so not only my brother, but my best friend was gone, and I felt like I didn't really have anyone to deal with it with. I just remember a lot of late nights reading my Bible and just praying and thinking, you know, I have no other options. Like, I can believe that God is real, that what I've learned is real and he is there, and I can give my life to him, everything that it is, or I can collapse under the weight of what I cannot deal with. And so that was definitely the moment where it became real to me. I'm like, yes, I can feel God here in this moment. I know that it's real, and this is mine, and this is the choice that I'm going to make with my life.
Hmm. All right. Just a follow-up question to that, and you know, maybe Jake, you can kick it off because you're the married one here. But kind of this whole idea of, you know, it's not like anyone in our audience necessarily is going to go out, or that any of us would say, you know, okay, well, I'm an evangelical Christian, Jesus is the Lord of my life, but it is totally okay for me to marry a Buddhist. You know, it's kind of extreme to say that. But there are a lot of things that, you know, we kind of have bought in as a culture to this. Well, you know, I'm spiritual, I'm just not religious, or I'm a Christian, of course, but da, 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 da. So what would you see as far as some of the gray areas? How have you come to grapple with that, you know, in marriage of, you know, you couldn't marry a clone. I mean, you couldn't say you agree on everything. And I think now with everything from the way we worship coming into play to politics to how do you navigate some of the differences and what's okay and what's not, you know, how have you had to have those conversations with your own wife who's listening? So be careful.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm grateful for the way my wife and I have been able to grow together in this area, because she, you know, for her family, her parents were pretty, were not really engaged in faith, really either of them, when she was growing up. And so they kind of all came to Jesus at the same time when my wife was a freshman or sophomore in high school. And so it was, I guess it's been interesting navigating that with somebody who was much younger in faith, and developing different perspectives together, I think, is something she and I had as a benefit. We didn't have as many of these hard and fast ideas about faith and politics to bash up against each other as much as we formed them together. So that was a benefit for us. But there still are those areas where I think this is one of the toughest questions, no matter what relationship you have, mm-hmm. whether it's marriage, whether it's siblings, whether it's parents, grandparents, friends. This idea of what is a gray area? How can I be friends with somebody that disagrees with me on a topic that I feel is really, really important, and they don't see it as important as I see it?
Mm-hmm.
And that ability to be, in Acts, when the apostles and disciples are gathering with Paul and they're trying to decide, what do we do with all these Gentiles that are getting saved? Because they worship different than us. They have different cultural backgrounds than us. They look different. They do everything different. And the interesting thing there is James, the brother of Jesus, comes out and says, look, here's like four things. Tell them not to do these four things, but then let them be. And so I think that's got to be pretty high on our minds when we're talking about this, because it's too easy to throw out relationships because of disagreements over stuff that even the disciples of Jesus who lived and walked on this earth with him said, you know what, let those other things go. So I encourage you to go read Acts chapter 15 and look at that dialogue between the disciples is they were wrestling with this very same question. Mm-hmm. What do we do in relationships with people that think and believe differently than us? Mm-hmm. You know, what's essential and what's not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or that don't even know what they believe.
Right.
So how,
that
I mean,
are still trying to establish that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which actually brings me to my next question, which is how do you take your faith that is very real, that is very primary in your life, and translate it to relationships with people in the world, whether that's through work or through friendships or family members or whatever. I mean, how I find that a lot of my non-Christian friends don't even care to have the conversation. It's not, they don't believe anything strongly. They're not thinking about Jesus each day and you know, they're not like rejecting him every day. They just don't even care. So how, I mean, where it really is this kind of anything goes, you believe in Jesus? Mm-hmm. That's so great. Oh, good job for you. You know, excellent. But then I have to like circle back and I'm like, no, not only do I believe in Jesus, you really need to believe in Jesus, and here's why.
Yeah.
But how do you do that without being creepy? How have you guys found that?
I mean, in my most recent context, I've got a friend who grew up a Christian and walked away from his faith. And with him, we had to sit down. And like we got a burger together, like let's go, let's get a big, awesome burger together. And I just want to tell you, like, I love you. There's nothing you can do to push me away. I know you don't believe the way I do, and you know I don't believe the way you do. I was like, as long as you're okay knowing that I'm gonna pray for you, that if you ask me for advice, it's gonna come from a biblical perspective, mm-hmm. that when all that, like, this is, you know that this is in my DNA, that I'm gonna pray for you. I'm going to love on you with God's love. Like, if you're good with that, there's nothing, you know, that can stop me from being in a relationship with you and bringing prayer for you and all that. Like, and so I hope you're okay with that. I'm not going to sit here in every conversation and say Bible verse, Bible verse, Bible verse, but I am going to live in relationship with you from my Christian, mm-hmm. you know, perspective, from the perspective that Jesus loves me and you. Mm-hmm. And I hope you're okay with that, because mm-hmm. I love you as a friend and I want to do life with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that has worked well for us. And he's been open to having deep discussions about faith and his own wrestling with his lack of faith now and where he's at with that, because he knows at the end of the day, I'm going to love him no matter where he lands on that conversion scale, you know, at the end of every conversation.
But I like that you stepped forward and had it be a conversation.
Yeah.
You didn't just say, well, we'll see what happens, or just kind of like, you know, you had to draw a line in the sand eventually and say, look, there are some, you know, I want to hear where you are on this, because we definitely are in different places.
Yeah, and it's looked different, but I've tried it with a friend who didn't have a faith background before that, and it's gone well with him too. So I think there's something to be said about having that conversation, you know, with them up front to say, here's my context,
mm-hmm.
and so this is where I'm coming from.
And I think even if you bring the biblical perspective but not label it the biblical perspective,
right.
and bring the earthly logic behind it as the reasoning for it, I think that that's pretty effective too. I've had some friends that I've had opportunity to do that with.
Yeah, everything doesn't have to be thus saith the Lord.
Yes.
Even though it is what the Lord says.
Because what God says is still, it's true because it's true, not just because he said it. He says it because it's true, and if that makes any sense.
Well, and I was going to ask you, Laura, how relationally, like with your brother, I mean, did you feel like that kind of drove a wedge? So it's kind of like you're forced to either pick sides, quote unquote, or how do you relate to him and your parents and stuff?
For a long time, I mean, like I said, he didn't come home very often during that time frame. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, it was just when he came home saying, hey, I still love you. I still care about you. You know, we're not even going to talk about what you're doing with the rest of your life. We're just going to enjoy the fact that you're here and I miss you and you're awesome. And my parents had a hard time with that because they were just so mad at him. But my mom actually came to me.
I would so want to talk about the rest of his life.
Oh, yes. You know, honestly, I've come to a point where I don't even want to know what he did.
But
my mom came to me after he finally did come home and came back to the faith. And she said, you know, what you did in that time frame with just loving your brother for who he was and where he was and not trying to bring the smack down on him, I could not have done that, and I feel like that is a major part of what brought him home.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, that was that was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and it's awesome that he's back.
Sometimes that is one of the hardest things to do is truly turn them over to the Lord and say, I need to step out for this season, or I need to relate differently.
And coming to them, you know, just with judgment isn't going to help anything. So. Yeah.
Well, good thoughts, you guys. Thanks so much. I mean, I think this is a tricky place that we're in our culture and in the church, to navigate relationships with people who truly don't share our faith, and then also figure out what does that actually mean for us personally in the process, and how does it help us re-examine our own faith as we do that. So thanks.
Absolutely.